original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Service. We're delighted to have them with us as our presenting sponsor.
Breakdown Service, Paul?
Breakdown Services. Did I not say?
You did not say the S.
I said Breakdown Service.
You did.
Our presenting sponsor.
Yes.
And I botched the name. And thank you for calling to everyone's attention, Michael. I appreciate that immensely.
It's not the only thing I'm going to call to
our presenting sponsor, Broke Down Service.
There you go.
Yes.
Broke Down
Thank
Mountain.
You.
There
it's
you
good
go.
Thing I read this. Very excited about our guests today. We have two in-studio guests, actually. We have actor Kevin Farrell, who is with us, and also personality par excellence DWI is also with us here in the studio. And Michael, please tell them about our call-in guest, which we're very excited about.
We have the fabulous, phenomenal Danny Bolero, ladies and gentlemen, who is co-starring currently in the U.S. national tour of In the Heights, the 2008 Tony Award-winning In the Heights, and it is getting ready to open tomorrow evening at the Orange County Performing Arts Center, just closed last night in San Diego.
And we both saw it here when it was at the Pantages.
We did indeed. We reviewed the show and gave it a glowing review. And
as it deserved.
As it deserved, absolutely.
And Danny was great in it, and we really look forward to talking to him about it.
Absolutely. So that's going to be in a few minutes. But Paul, in the interim, how was your week?
My week was fine. It was interesting. We were talking... But before we do, first let's welcome at least Kevin. Kevin, welcome.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Hello,
I'm
Kevin.
Good.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I scared
Absolutely.
You, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I did. You just did deer in the headlights.
No,
you were like, do I have to talk now?
I was listening to you.
You look very attractive in the headset. I got to say, it works for you.
It doesn't Thanks. Always look attractive on everybody,
but it does.
But
he
can, wear it well.
He can pull it off, can't
Princess
he?
Leia?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's sort of a little Princess Leia.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. You just scarred my adolescence. To answer your question, and welcome, Kevin. It was a very, very interesting week.
Yes.
Just sort of crazy. We cast our show. We cast Of Grapes and Nuts, the mm-hmm. next Sea Glass production.
Wonderful. So comes up in September.
September 18th we open, and we have a wonderful cast assembled for that. But I started to think about, we got a little feedback regarding the announcement that we made on the show a couple of weeks ago about the worst thing to ever happen to you on stage.
Oh, yes.
A nightmare,
yes.
An onstage nightmare. And I started to think about it, and it occurred to me that the most awkward thing to ever happen to me didn't really happen during a straight play, but happened when I was doing warm-up for the Jenny Jones show, because I talked about, Kevin, you were you in Chicago at the same time
yes.
I was working on Jenny
uh-huh.
Jones?
Okay. Yeah.
And I had to, you know, no one prepares you when you're either a stand-up or an actor or something, specifically
right.
stand-up, and warm-up is not as difficult as stand-up because you're giving out instructions and everything. But I did find myself in the wonderful position of having to follow Klansmen.
Klansmen?
Yes, I had to follow Klansmen.
What, is that a group? A recording group?
No, I mean as in Ku Klux Klansmen. I mean,
are you really?
I'm serious. I'm
really?
Serious. We actually had Ku Klux Klansmen on the show, and I went out there, did my usual, 5 to 10 minutes. Okay, don't wave at the cameras, okay, now be sure to smile, and Jenny's going to come out and applaud and everything. And then the show starts, and then, Zeke the Cousin Stupper comes out, and at that particular performance, Jenny had a primarily African-American audience. It wasn't planned that way or anything. It was just
right.
luck of the draw. So we had,
Luck of the
draw. And primarily African-American audience, and then, five Klansmen on stage. And then, of course, 10 minutes into it, the audience was fit to be tied. They were just like, yeah, kill him. And the producer comes up to me and he goes, okay, Paul, go back out there and let's get that audience back. And I'm like, okay, you're asking me to follow Klansmen. Okay. Which no one has ever prepared anyone for in terms of, so what do you do? So I go out there and I have this very, very angry mob in front of me. And I have, these maniacs in sheets behind me. And I said, okay, How about a little row, row, row your boat? Okay? Let's start with this section over here. Jews only. Row, row, row. Not the homosexuals. Row, row, row. Jewish homosexuals sing twice. Row, row, row. And it actually worked. It actually brought them back. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that here were these maniacs behind us that were sort of calling attention to these different groups of people and how they should be reviled or loathed or whatever. And just by taking that and sort of flipping it on its head, I did manage to win the audience back after Klansman, which I consider a personal best.
And no one had ever heard of their records. And how? And on top of it, who knew that those segments of those groups of people would be in the audience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how they were seated, Michael.
Luck
they sat
is always
Jews
your
in
friend.
One section, homosexuals in the middle, and black Jewish homosexuals to the right. That's
there
the way
go.
They
That's Good Chicago, though, isn't it?
Can you? I know I'm putting you on the spot, Kevin, but can you remember your worst onstage experience?
Well, we
actor?
Kind of talked about that before the show. I was doing a show in Chicago, and...
No, we didn't talk about it, Michael. Kevin, it's all natural.
No.
It just all happens naturally. It springs organically from the earth.
Well, if anybody has ever lived in Chicago or done shows in Chicago, the theaters are usually very small, and the winters are very cold. And I had to be naked
okay.
in a show in Chicago in the dead of winter in a very, very small theater, like 50 seat. I think it was called Winter's Tales.
It was called Tiny Genitalia.
Right, that's actually, by the end of the show.
And it's the musical. Tiny Genitalia the musical.
Oh, that show.
Yeah. Why do you think it was a bad experience? So, yeah, it wasn't a memorable experience.
No.
You said,
though, that you'd rather be naked on stage at the Pantages.
Well, yeah, because they have a balcony.
Oh, okay. So it would really
well,
be
Well, don't we think yeah, something of ourselves? Well, Michael had a situation like that he talked about on an earlier broadcast, which is almost like yours, except it was not intentional nudity, but rather accidental, almost nudity, with your the
oh,
change.
Oh, yes, the quick change.
You're looking at me like you don't remember
Well, because
that.
I was afraid that you were taking me down a path I'd
he
not
blocked
been
it.
Before.
Yeah. He blocked
yeah.
it.
No, but you do, I mean, can I you did. Can you do an encapsulated
well, sure.
version
I mean,
of that?
You know, actor, of course, musical theater is where I was born, and Bye Bye Birdie, on stage in front of 3,000 people, quick change, beginning of show, going from the New York teenagers to the Sweet Apple, Ohio teenagers in a strobe light, underdressed, right? New York clothes on top, peeling them off, 30 seconds, lights come up, we're in Sweet Apple, Ohio, I'm in a red sweater, a white, you know, collar for my little shirt and my little American flag, waving it, and I look down and I'm standing there in my dance belt.
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
Which I think the only thing that makes the, let's just say for the sake, the only thing that makes the tiny Michael any smaller as far as a winter in Chicago is a dance belt, because
yes.
that might as well be like duct tape and spackle, you know. I'm sure Danny Bolero is going to really love the fact that our lead into his conversation
right.
is all about tiny genitals.
Well, God bless Danny. I mean, he has, of course, he'll understand. He's an actor. It's probably happened to him at some point, don't you think?
Well, before we go to talk to Danny, which we'll get to in moments, but I did want to acknowledge Breakdown Services as one of our as our only presenting sponsor. But there's also another organization that we want to call attention to in the lead into this show. But before we do, Breakdown Services Limited is a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And Michael,
yes.
we have another group that is a supporter of ours called Performing Arts Live. Would
yes,
you tell
indeed.
The folks about that?
PerformingArtsLive.com, which is the most comprehensive online resource for information about what's happening and what's playing, when and where in Southern California. Like State of the Arts, the popular site is passionate about not only increasing the visibility and support of organizations that present the arts, but more than eager to help bring performing artists and their audience together. So hats off to Mike Napoli for developing PerformingArtsLive.com, a community online service like no other.
And we should also mention that we have an active link to Performing Arts Live
yes.
on our site, stateoftheartsla.com. You can click right through and find out about more productions that are going on in Los Angeles. But right now, why don't we throw it to the talented Danny Bolero. Danny, are you with us?
Tiny bubble. Hi, how are you guys?
Hey. We are in rare form here, Danny. who knew we're going to be talking about
Danny,
this?
As you know, it's Pants Off Monday, as
right.
we've established, and the theme of this show, so we hope that even though you're not with us in the studio, that you are following suit.
Yes, definitely. Hello? Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes, we
okay,
can.
Okay, great. Also, I have another version. It's also Breakdown Servicios.
Oh, there you go. We'll do that for our Spanish-speaking listeners.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly. Hey, before we start, Danny, did you know that July 31st, and Kevin, July 31st was National Dance Day? Now your show, Danny, I can't imagine that those kids wouldn't have known that, right?
No, I don't think they're aware of that.
Really?
I need to let them know. Yeah.
No, it's already passed. It was on July 31st. I happened to be in town reviewing a show, which we're going to talk about later in the hour, Guys and Dolls, and right prior to the curtain, they made this announcement, and the entire audience was instructed to get up and dance with one another, which we did. Yeah. And we had no choice. It wasn't too pretty, but it was, it was National Dance Day, so what could we do?
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm sure they'd like to know about it, though.
In the spirit, though. In the spirit,
yes,
right?
Definitely.
Danny, thank you. I know today was an arduous day for you because you were traveling from San Diego to Orange County as the show moved into the Orange County Performing Arts Center, and you open there tomorrow evening.
Yes,
and
sir.
You have such an amazing connection to this show, don't you? This is something that started for you a while back and took you a while to get into the show in New York.
Yeah.
And then on the tour. Tell us about that.
Well, I was in Ed Begley's show, Caesar and Reuben, at the time, and I had heard about In the Heights. I didn't know anything about it, and one of my fellow cast members had mentioned that they were going to an audition. And at the time, I didn't have an agent, so I just kind of broke the audition, went and crashed the audition, and I was given the sides, and I was asked to come back the next day, learn the song, come back the next day, and which I did, and I was called back again, but that's as far as this was when the show was transferring from off Broadway to Broadway,
uh-huh.
And they were looking for someone for the role of Kevin.
Really, at the very formative days of the show, very very early on.
Yes, that's as far as the auditions was just. I didn't get called. That's as far as it went from there. A year went by, and then they had a open call in L.A., and I had an agent at the time. I tried to get an agent, but they had already... I tried to get an audition, but the casting had already said they had seen me, they weren't interested. Well, I wasn't going to stop there, so I went to the open call. I was like number 300 and something, and I got called back twice, and then I got flown to New York for producers. This is for The Replacement on Broadway, and... again, I didn't get it, but being as stubborn as I am, I decided to just keep working on the material, and they called my agent about a month later and asked if I would be interested in coming in as a replacement, a vacation swing, which I did. And I don't, for your listeners who don't know, a vacation swing comes and covers for someone for 2 weeks while they're on vacation, basically, and you learn the show in a week, and you're on. So that's what I did. I went to New York, did my 2 weeks. They flew me back home, and then a month later they called again and asked if I would be willing to come out for about I think it was a month, but it turned into almost 2.5 months for the same role. And during that time, I had my final audition for the tour for Kevin on the tour. And a week later they called and told my agent I booked the gig.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah.
So that was. And look where you are now. You've been with the show since from that point on, right?
Yes, sir.
And you are staying with the show at least through... Is April the first kind of contract renewal on the show, or...?
Well, we just renewed again till April.
Oh, you did? Okay, so you're...
Yeah, we've been going... the tour started in September of last year.
It did. And now I understand that you are going to Japan.
We're going to Japan right after Costa Mesa. We fly to Japan. We're there for 3 weeks. And they've just added Puerto Rico to the new contract.
Oh, fantastic, huh?
Which Lynn is coming back to do Puerto Rico, which is great.
Oh, I'm sure he is. Well, he should. But you know what? But looking at your travel schedule, I looked at it this morning. How are you getting from Costa Mesa to Tokyo and opening 2 day? It's a 2 day situation. It's like any other move, right?
Yeah, it's going to be tight. They're flying the set over. We close on Sunday. They fly the set over that morning, and then we fly out on Tuesday. We lose a day and arrive Thursday and open the show, I believe, Friday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be a little crazy.
I'm also just imagining that tour shirt and just to imagine it seeing In the Heights, L.A., Costa Mesa, Japan. Just that sequence of locations. It's just pretty surreal the way you guys are bouncing around with that. I mean, in addition to, I mean, the show already, I mean, Michael, as we said earlier, Michael and I saw it. We were completely bowled over by it, the energy that takes place, the performance that you guys deliver. And I don't think anyone considers that, you know, it's not only the performance, but it's also just the tolerance of life on the road, of keeping your energy up. And do you find that to be difficult, or tell us about that.
You know, fortunately, it's a great group of people, and what you see on stage is exactly what it is backstage. Everyone cares about each other. We all get along. Luckily for that, it makes it a lot easier. But I mean, when you have to pack up every week and take your clothes out of a suitcase, it does get a little tiring. But it's part of the job, you know. And when you hear the support from the audiences, it makes it all worth it. Yeah. It really makes it worth it. And it's like LA was incredible because we got to sit down for 5 weeks, and LA just embraced us and just supported us, and it was like a rock concert at times.
It certainly seemed like that when we were there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed, it was.
I mean, there was a feeling of Michael and I, when we saw it, we sort of I don't know if it was you who said it, Michael, or me, because we were so sort of, you know, coping with just having experienced the first act at the time. But the sensation was almost like it was the feeling that you got when they first opened West Side Story.
Yes.
That it was sort of like you realized you were just watching this seminal piece of theater that would eventually be timeless. And right. I really do think that that is the case with this production. I mean, it really was. And in all honesty, Danny, I'm not the hugest fan of musicals. I enjoy them, and I certainly don't follow them or know about them as well as Michael does, but I do I am interested in them. But what was so impressive about this production is to sit in the audience and to look over and to see a 70-year-old man to my left and a 17-year-old girl of Hispanic descent to my right, and the different cultures and the different ages, and everyone collectively embracing this show, on their own level, but at the same time with the same amount of palatable enthusiasm. It really was something to experience. It was an experience to see the show, but it was also an experience just to be in the audience for the show. I mean, you guys have to truly sense that up on stage.
Oh, definitely. If I may, share an experience that just recently happened.
Please do. Please.
There's a young woman that came to see the show in L.A. and contacted me through Facebook and wanted to send a thank you letter to the entire cast because of her connection with the show. And I said, send it to me. I'd post it backstage and show it to everyone. But after reading the letter, I decided to send it to the cast directly through an email. And what it was basically is the young woman had studied theater, had lost a friend to brain, had like a slew of events that just had people that very close to her that had passed away. And she had then discovered she had nodules on her vocal cords, was unable to sing anymore. Her whole life turned upside down and basically was at the point of ending it all. And she had heard about the show, and then when she saw the show, she was just completely blown away by it. It touched her in a way that nothing else had. She felt the connection to family and to how important that was, and it brought her back. I mean, and these were her words, and it was just such an incredible feeling to read that and to know that somehow we were connected to that in her changing her life around. Wow. And that responsibility we have as performers on stage is just such an honor and such an incredible responsibility.
And it's not only not only are you helping the people who come in and experience the show to sort of triumph over that adversity in their lives and really touch people like that, but there's a great deal of personal adversity that you had within your own family that you've managed to triumph over too without prying too much. Can you share a little of that?
Absolutely, yes.
Very interesting.
Well, Yeah, when I had gotten back from my dad had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and had had it for about 8-9 years. It was slow progressing. But when I was on the road with Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and I was riding home and connecting with my parents, and I noticed my mom's memory was starting to get very forgetful. At the end of being on tour, which was in '96, I went home to find out my mom also had Alzheimer's, and From the way the house was at the time and their financial, the way things were financially, I decided to just take some time off and to take, to look after them. I had some money put away. I could kind of take the time off. And what ended up happening was that it 1 year turned into 4 years, and I'd quit working and pretty much became their full-time caregivers. Up until they got ill, my mom passed in '99, and, my dad like 6 months later. So it was an incredible journey for me to kind of give back and to become the parent in that situation. One that I will never, ever forget. And I cherish those days because I was able to see my parents in a different light and I was able to get to know them in a different way. I'm the youngest. And they had me quite late in their life and in their mid-40s. And so I never really got to... By the time I was old enough, they were already, in their 60s and 70s. So it was nice to kind of spend that type of time with them.
Well, I empathize with you, Danny, because my parents, respectively, 87 and 93, my mother being the younger of the two, are going through the same thing. So they're in their mid stages, it's an emotional journey, for a child to see their own parent kind of revert back to a very childlike, in many cases, demeanor. So I applaud you for being there for them and taking care of them. I mean, it's something that's really that they knew was happening in their own special way, and it's a tough assignment. So God bless you for that. God bless them.
Thank you. I'm sorry to hear about your parents. It was a journey that I'm very grateful for. It made me a better person, that's why this role in the show is so important to me, because every night that I step on that stage, I bring them with me. Because that was my parents. Those were my parents up on that stage.
I was just going to comment on that, Danny. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was just going to comment on exactly that. I mean, it's as an audience member, I sensed that. I mean, you could tell. I mean, the performance that you do and the theme of the show and sort of that family unit and adhering to traditions and all of those things, I mean, you must have really, I mean, like all actors, you take things from your personal life and sort of infuse them into your performance. But this experience had to enrich that character fully. I mean, how do you separate the two, or do you separate the two in performance?
I try to bring them with me and I can feel them with me actually when I'm on that stage. And it's a great, it's in honor of them and because I don't know if as I grow older, I become more and more like my parents, like my father. And so I take those traits and I bring them on stage with me and it gives me, it feeds me back just to know that they're there with me. It gives me pleasure to know that they are with me and that I am living through them somehow on stage.
Well, you really do. You honor them, Danny. You really do.
Thank you, sir.
You honor them in your performance, and you honor them with what you've told us here today about it. It's very inspiring, and my hope is that we have listeners that. It's not my hope that listeners are in the same situation. My hope is that if we do have listeners that are in the same situation, that they can take some strength from what you've said and apply it to their personal lives and look at your own personal history and your personal successes, and hopefully it will strengthen them.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, God bless you for that. And Danny, let me just go back to In the Heights for a moment. And, you've been an actor since you were a young man. Somewhere around the age of 15 you started acting. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And you've gone on to this amazing success. I'm just looking at your resume at the same time and looking at the films you've done and the commercials and the television and certainly the extraordinary amount of theater that you've done. And now you're in something that, as Paul said earlier, we both mutually felt was something that we were seeing of great importance. You know, one of the new American musicals that was going to be around for the next 40, 50 years and just be done over and over again, like it well should be. And there's some special things that are happening with the musical now, we understand. Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course, who composed and wrote the musical, is set to star in what will become a motion picture version. Is this correct?
Yes, sir.
And Kenny Ortega is directing it. Who's
the
director of High School Musical. And Michael Jackson's This Is It. And he's attached to this production, which is being done by Universal. And what does that mean? Will some of you be in contention to possibly repeat the roles that you're playing now, whether it's...
I know nothing. I say nothing. I know nothing.
Oh, you can.
So in other words, I could submit my resume then.
Please.
Is that what you're saying?
No, to be honest, I don't. I know that they were planning to do it, start filming this year, but I believe it's been pushed back to 2011. So all of the casting and all that has not been, the plans for casting has not been announced yet. So I know nothing. Thank you very much.
Well, I know that the Broadway production in which you started off with here, now currently it's got Corbin Bleu of Disney's High School Musical in the show on Broadway. And I think that's through the 17th of August. And then American Idol winner Jordan Sparks headlines the production beginning August 19th. So they're keeping it, infusing all of this young talent to keep it on Broadway and keep the doors open and the people flocking in as well they should be. And I'll certainly say it, the Pantages, man, we didn't see an empty seat in the house.
No, and what you'd said earlier, Danny, there was, the rock concert is really the way to describe it. It really seemed like, you know, we have to go to the younger people to keep live theater alive. I mean, the median age of a ticket buyer now is 55 years old, and there's no place to go except younger to get people into the theater, and it's especially difficult with the with the dreck of reality crap that's on television that is so distracting for young people. You know, it really is important to have these particular properties out there for people to embrace, and you guys have done it a service.
Well, you know, it is a modern musical, but it's actually a traditional Broadway show. I mean, it's got that heart. It's very similar to Fiddler on the Roof, I think.
Yes, very much so.
But with the modern music and the rap, the hip hop, and it pulls the crowds in. But I also think L.A. in particular. I mean, the voice to see Latinos up on a stage in Los Angeles, I think, was an amazing thing here. And I think the kids and the audience members in particular just were hungry for that voice to see those images up there, to see the role models up there. At the stage door, I was told many, many times that how important it was and how great it was to see Latinos and to hear Spanish on stage and to hear ideas that they could identify with, and especially in Los Angeles. The show's done incredible across the country, but especially in Los Angeles, it was really nice to hear that feedback and to hear that applause, because I think it's very rare that you see a show that has Latinos on stage. I mean, the few that are out there usually don't. That doesn't happen. I mean, you know, you take Vida and you take West Side Story. Very seldom do you see Latinos in those on the stage productions. But it was nice to be in LA.
In productions where they have where they're strong and they're self assured and they're not subservient. You know, that they're
exactly
that where their culture is celebrated, as opposed to, you know, like West Side Story, wonderful show. But let's face it, the Hispanics don't come across to the majority of them. Don't, I mean, they're a gang. You know, they're a gang.
Exactly.
West Side Story. So, you know, I mean, aside from Maria, who has the great songs, you know. But Danny, thank you so much for joining us. We have to
thank you.
I need to say just one, two things, Paul, if I may, to Danny.
Oh, please.
Danny, after the show, I was walking to my car, and I met one of your colleagues there in the show, one of the cast members who just charmed me, Isabel Santiago.
Yes.
Please send her my regards if she remembers me, number one.
I sure will.
And number two, as I was waiting for her and I was thinking about you, and I thought, you know, maybe Danny's going to come out and I'll be able to say hello to Danny. And you actually walked right past me, but I didn't know it because I was so engaged with Isabel.
she's pretty incredible.
Yes, she was. And all of you were. And as Paul said, you know, we thank you so much for being with us today. And you know, Danny's, for 4 years, how long have I been chasing you to headline my nightclub in Studio City?
Yes.
So I actually
it's going to happen soon. It will happen soon.
Well, I have no doubt it will. I hope that it will, that's for sure. And I know how precious a Monday is to you as a cast member traveling through the country. And we're going to let you go. And we thank you one more time for joining us. Give everybody our best. Knock 'em dead in Orange County and in Tokyo.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Danny. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Michael.
Okay, great. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Danny. Thank you. That was great. We're going to move into our live arts calendar before we talk to the lovely and talented Kevin Farrell, who will be with us shortly. But our arts calendar for this week, we begin with Ringo Starr and his all-star band will perform at the Greek Theater in Los Angeles Saturday, August 7th, in support of Why Not, Ringo's 16th studio album, which features several notable collaborations and guest appearances, including a duet with fellow Beatle Paul McCartney, Joe Walsh, and Richard Marx. They're not all fellow Beatles. Just the first one is a fellow Beatle, among others. Billboard called the collection some of his best and most poignant songs in years, while Rolling Stone said Why Not is full of straightforward, sweetly melodic tunes, most of them about Starr's abiding optimism.
Following the much-lauded world premiere production of Timothy McNeill's Supernova, Los Angeles's critically acclaimed award-winning Elephant Theater Company continues its 14th season with the West Coast premiere of Parasite Drag, a darkly comic play about a small-town Illinois family and the stories that haunt them. The intrigue unfolds as two estranged brothers are forced together to make arrangements for their runaway sister, whose years of drug addiction have finally taken their toll. Parasite Drag plays August 13th through September 18th at the Elephant Space in Hollywood.
Masterpieces by Van Gogh, Renoir, and many others, coupled with the musical genius of Claude Debussy, is the event. And Dr. Young-Wan Jin, a graduate of the Juilliard and Manhattan Schools of Music, is the featured artist. It all comes together as the Steinway Society presents its annual Music and the Masters, a complimentary afternoon on Sunday, August 8th, in the elegant ambiance of the Palm Springs Art Museum and the beautiful Annenberg Theater in Palm Springs, California.
I loved how you said Debussy and Annenberg Theater.
Don't you love that?
I do that.
You know, it's almost like I knew what I was talking about.
After sold-out performances at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, the workshop of Elevator is now on stage as a full production at Hollywood's Hudson Theater Guild through August 22nd. When seven strangers get stuck in an elevator, it's only a matter of time before each proved to be anything but typical. Their preconceived notions, stereotypes, and judgments are challenged at every turn as one by one they shed their masks and reveal their truths.
The Actors Gang presents Katie the Cursed, a free family-friendly adaptation of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, features the title star as ruler of a 1970s Paduan punk rock music scene. Live rock and roll music, sparkling wit, acrobatics, juggling, water balloons, and tossed cream pies meld together in classic slapstick comedy suitable for all ages. Calling all kids, don't miss this late morning weekend run now through August 29th at Media Park in Culver City, California.
And last on our arts calendar, guys.
It's an outs calendar. It's a different type of show.
Let's get the end of the hour here. Guys and Dolls, touted as one of the most perfect American musicals ever written, is taking all bets at the West Valley Playhouse in Canoga Park, California. Set in Damon Runyon's mythical New York, this oddball musical comedy features a memorable hit score of such Frank Lesser classics as Luck Be a Lady, Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, Take Back Your Mink, and I've Never Been in Love Before. Don't miss it, on stage now through August 29th. And speaking of that, Paul, I had the great pleasure of reviewing the show. We went to the show on Saturday.
Right.
July 31st. This is the show that we had to all get up and dance, in the audience with one another because it was National Dance Day. Because as you know, on So You Think You Can Dance, they tell you these things, right? Do you watch that show, Kevin?
Which show?
So You Think You Can Dance?
I try not to.
You try not to.
What? I'm sorry.
Who let him in here?
But I didn't know that it was National Dance Day.
Yes, but everybody knows that.
Was this the first year for it?
Yes.
Oh, okay, well, that's why. Well,
it's not exactly a tradition
yet. I've been dancing. I'm
but
sorry,
so you
ahead.
Dance anyway.
All the time.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Kevin is dancing now.
Right now.
Yes. We have a gyroscopic microphone strapped to
there's
his head.
There's a pole here in the studio.
Strapped to his dance belt.
Well, there's a pole, there's an Italian, there's a Jew. Lady! Oh, sorry. Anyway, Michael, go ahead. Sorry.
No, simply, this was one of the nicest surprises, actually, that I've had in a long time.
Really?
And that was, yes, by going out to Canoga Park, and which is a 15-minute drive from the localized area of Studio City and Sherman Oaks in this area here. And 15 minutes down the freeway, and boom, you're there. And it's a lovely, lovely theater that is 167 seats. Kind of a diamond shape, you know. The audience is on two sides, and the playing center is in the
like a pointed thrust
in the center. Yes,
like
exactly.
A pointed thrust. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about this, the director is this lovely, passionate man by the name of John Barry. And boy, he told me he said, "Look for me." He said, "You won't have any trouble finding me when you arrive, Michael." He said, "I'm the tallest guy in the place. I'm 6'6", and wow. He wasn't kidding. And he is such a gentle giant, if you will. I mean, this man was so lovely. And he put together an extraordinary production, very simply, almost a concert version, if you will, of this production, but with very, very wonderful professional talent on that stage in all of the primary roles, and hearing all of those, that wonderful score come to life, and some standout performances in the show, not only, of course, by the leads, and I'll mention them in a moment, but somebody who really kind of tugged at my heartstrings all the way through the show was a gentleman by the name of Michael J. Aronovitz. And he is about 4.5 feet tall. He's just
really?
The sweetest looking man with his amazing character face playing the role of Benny Southstreet, if you know the show. And everything, every little nuance, every movement in his body, everything about him was just, I couldn't take my eyes off of him. You know, the leads were terrific, wonderful, all of them, and John David Wallace as Guy Masterson, and Noel Britton as Miss Adelaide, and where I'm trying to find Sarah here, the young lady that played Sarah Brown. Yes, Kristen Towers Rawls. Tremendous, all of them. The ensemble, all of them, you know, female, males, what they were doing and the dancing and the singing, led by the lovely Melissa Strauss in the ensemble. And the costumes. The costumes were gorgeous to look at. And John did a very interesting thing. He used slides as the backdrop for the entire set. So they used set pieces.
Yeah.
But the slides were actually appropriate to the storyline. So the mission, which actually was a mission in New York during that time period, is pictured in one of these slides, the outside and the inside of it, and then all the streets that they are on in the storyline of the show are shown behind, all in black and white.
Oh, wow. So it's sort of stylized.
Exactly.
With a color element of the actors and then the background.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And it was a very unique take on this musical, which I've certainly seen many times before, one of my great stories being with when Betty Grable did it.
Yeah.
And I was just a young one at that time and saw a little bit more of Betty Grable than I cared to see at that particular
time. Oh, that's that
yes,
story
that's
for another show.
Yes, yes, but God bless her.
Was she in a dance belt?
No.
Yes, but it was on her head. She was wearing a dance belt.
She actually, Kevin, had nothing on down there.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a quick change that she didn't make.
Oh,
yeah.
And she had to go on stage. Yeah.
Was that, and how old were you?
14
wow.
at the time.
Wow.
So that didn't scar you at all, did
no,
it?
No, not at all. Mommy!
Well, that sounds like a great production.
It is. I urge anybody to go and see it. Let me just tell you how you can do that. Again, it's at the West Valley Playhouse. It's out in Canoga Park, a quick drive from the heart of L.A. here. You simply go to the box office and purchase tickets, or you can call them at 818-884-1907.
And speaking of people who don't wear underwear,
yes.
Can we move on? Mr. Kevin
wow.
Farrell is here,
really?
Ladies and gentlemen.
I am wearing underwear today. Thank you,
yes,
Paul.
But sadly, that's all he's wearing. Kevin, I want to...
What kind of a show is that?
I know. This is exciting.
Kevin, I want to just sort of dive right into something that... Because I think that you can certainly identify with one of the things that our first guest had mentioned in his experience as an actor was sort of, you know, not really working as much as he wanted to and sort of making his own work. Now, I've known you for years. I've known you from the Chicago days. And one of my favorite stories about your experiences as an actor is how you got on Frasier. Would you share that story? Because I think it's one of those things that people don't believe that stuff like this actually happens.
You know,
but it's a great tale.
I would love to, because, you know, the thing that I loved about what Danny was talking about is, you know, he obviously had such perseverance.
Yes.
He just kept going back to those calls and kept going back to those calls. Well, I was working for a theater company in Chicago back, it was about the second year that Frasier was on TV, and these people kept coming up to me saying, "You look so much like the guy who plays Frasier's brother, who is David Hyde Pierce." And I'd never seen the show before. Well, we were all out having beers after a show one night, and we were at a theater across the street from the at a bar across the street from the theater, and the show was on. And somebody was like, "There, that's the guy, that's the guy." And I looked up, and I saw David Hyde Pierce, and it was eerie, because it was like looking in a mirror.
Right.
So we submitted me, blindly, the theater company, to Jeff Greenberg, the head of casting for Frasier, and you know, saying, "You should know about this guy. His name's Kevin Farrell. He looks like David Hyde Pierce. He should be on the show." And then I followed up with that, sending my own headshot probably about 6 or 7 months later. And 2 years passed, and I walked into my apartment in Chicago, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was Jeff Greenberg from Paramount, and he asked if I'd be interested in being auditioned for a role on on Frasier. And of course I was like, "Well, I'll have to check my calendar." No, but they did. They put me on tape. They auditioned me in Chicago, and they overnighted the audition tape back here. They looked at it, and then they called me with notes the next day, and I did the notes, and we filmed it again, and then they offered me a role, and that was shot in 1996.
And they not only offered you a role, but they customized the show. Basically, the premise was you were someone that Daphne dated that drove Niles crazy because of how similar to him.
Exactly.
And a lot of people, I'm sure, have seen that episode.
I certainly did.
It's a great episode.
It was a really popular episode.
Yeah, it just was very, very funny. And so I don't think it's a stretch to say that, you know, they wouldn't create a storyline like that unless they knew they had that go-to
right.
person, because they needed that actor who
right.
was just like that.
And what was so great about working with them too is that, I mean, obviously that was the first time I'd ever been on television, so I was like scared, but you know, hanging out with them for the whole week is that the majority of all of them were theater actors, you know.
Right.
John Mahoney and
Steppenwolf, yeah.
I mean, all of them were basically theater actors, so they really knew their art, and the writing on that show was just so brilliant that you couldn't not be good with the writers that were on that show. And
right.
it was just
right.
it was a great it was just such a great experience. And
how was Jane Leaves to work with?
She was great.
Yeah.
She was great. She was a little intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was because she's English, but just so charming. So charming, because I'd never been on TV before.
Right.
Had
she's
never
in
been in front of a camera.
In a new series right now.
Yeah. And have you watched it?
I have.
I think it's brilliant.
Oh, Hot in
Cleveland.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very funny.
We need more shows like
very,
that.
Very, very. You know why? Because it's like it's going back to old sitcom
yep.
land, but in a good way.
Exactly.
In a good way. Like, I mean, and what more pedigree could you have for a sitcom than that? You have Valerie Bertinelli, you have Betty White, you have Jane Leaves, and you have
Wendy
Malick.
Oh, Wendy's
I mean, it's
great.
Just like everyone has cut their teeth in sitcoms just beautifully. So here's one thing, Kevin, that you did, the Frasier scenario. But then you got out here, and then you share your experiences in terms of, I mean, one of the things I've talked about on the show is creating work for yourself and not waiting for other people to give you the opportunity to work. And you did something fascinating with that, which I really want to make sure that we address, because we only have about 6 or 7 minutes left. But explain how DWI came about.
Well, that's my Tupperware character. I do Tupperware shows in drag as DWI. She's from Tennessee.
So that's DEEW period IEYE.
Right.
Yeah, but it's DWI. Say it right.
DWI. That's the way
not
they say
to be
it
confused
in,
with driving while intoxicated,
right.
which is where that first came
yes,
from.
Yes.
But I was working as an actor, and then I started to not work so much as an actor, so I was doing all the jobs that we do as actors, you know,
right.
To pay the rent. And a friend of mine had been selling Tupperware as his character for several years, and he saw me play this character in a fundraiser in 2004.
And his was a character aside
was a character
from himself.
Also,
okay.
Correct.
All right.
And he said, "Why don't you sell Tupperware as DWI?" And I said, "You're crazy. I'm not dressing up like a woman and going into people's homes and selling Tupperware." Because I'd seen his show and he was very funny. And I had no idea how I was going to translate it, you know, for myself. Because I'd never really done drag before. This
right.
was the first time. So lo and behold, you know, after him asking me like 6 or 8 times, I decided to sign up, and the first year was very slow, but, you know, I just took that character and the fact that I'm a trained actor for years and years and years, and basically just built a show around selling Tupperware. So it's about a 45-minute show when I go into someone's home to do a demo, and it's all about DWI and her living in Tennessee and how she used Tupperware in her kitchen and how it helps you save money and save the environment. And it's basically, you know, 45 minutes of a structured show that's really stand-up, because it changes every night that I do it. Because
oh, sure.
The room is always different.
Oh, yeah, sure. You
and
have
there's
that
a little background that we should know about, Dee, right? She was the sole heir to the Jack Daniels fortune, right?
Yes, she was.
And she began her circuit of beauty pageants, the circuit of beauty pageants at a very young age, and eventually found herself out here in Los Angeles competing for the crown in Aid for AIDS Best in Drag Show in 2004.
Correct.
Right? And tell us more about that. What's the background here?
And for she was created. So Dee was created basically for the Best in Show for
right.
the drag show, which was a fundraiser.
Right.
And she was so embraced by that. You knew you had something
yeah.
there at that time.
Yeah. I didn't know what legs she had. Well,
right.
she has great legs.
Well, we saw what legs she has. Saw a little too much.
But no, I just didn't know where I was going to take that. I mean, right. after I did that benefit, I never thought that I would ever put her on again.
The benefit was amazing too, Michael. I helped Kevin out with it, and the peak of it at the end, she came out, Dee came out in this ball gown, this hoop skirt actually, and she's stumbling out on stage, and you don't really realize why until the front of the hoop skirt opens and you see that underneath the hoop skirt is a completely stocked bar
of Jack Daniels
of Jack Daniels. The entire it was one of the biggest payoffs of the night. It was and that's a great organization. They
yeah.
really do
well. It's a great it's work.
Are we talking about Jack Daniels?
Yeah, right. It's a great organization. But it's AFA, Aid for AIDS. And,
oh, right.
and they do this pageant every year. And in one night, they always raise like a ridiculous amount of money, like $236,000 in one night just going to see this pageant of
right.
drag queens. There's like 8 contestants. And they do it always at the end of October.
And it's got a huge following. I mean, Kathy Griffin
yeah,
hosts
it. Yeah, she usually does stand up for us.
Yeah.
She opens the show.
Wow.
And they asked actually DWI to come back this year as a commentator on stage. So
oh.
I'm not going back this year as a contestant, but I'm going back as a commentator that they do commentation.
A mistress of ceremonies,
exactly.
if you will.
Yeah.
And Dee is going back with... I mean, a couple of years history, because I think the interesting thing about this is that it's fun to talk about, oh, let's do this as our character, let's apply this actor thing to this endeavor, and it's a way for me to pay my bills and blah, blah, blah. But it is mushroomed into something, I mean, I don't want to tell people, I want you to tell people. Tell people where the trajectory of Dee has taken you in terms of the Tupperware thing.
Well, it's just, it's really astronomical. I mean, when I started out doing this, I thought, you know, I was just going to be doing a couple Tupperware parties a month. But now I'm booked 4 months out. Last year, I think I sold over $236,000 worth of Tupperware. And in the last 3 years, I've been the number one personal selling Tupperware lady in the nation for the last 3 years. And next week I'll find out if it's a four-peat. I'll find out next week in Orlando, Florida.
I mean, that's just staggering to me that this thing that I mean, and it really goes back to what Danny talked about. It's just tenacity about taking the tools that you have and applying them to the world that you're in, and really. I mean, 3 years as the number one Tupperware.
I mean,
on
its
way
really,
to a four-peat. I liked that expression, a four-peat.
Well, you're not a sports enthusiast, Michael. Because
oh, and
that's
I am.
Actually, no, but that's, I mean, even
is that a sports term? Excuse me, Paul.
You know what's kind of tragic? That in this
that?
Room, I'm the sports enthusiast.
I know, that's really
Really? I like it. Keep using it. I'm going to use it. Now.
But I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I was just going to say... You're doing. You got a car out of it, didn't you? Didn't
yeah.
they give you a car?
Tupperware actually has a sales incentive plan where if it's an 18-month program,
right.
where you better your sales over 18 months, and then anybody can do it. You sell a lot of Tupperware, and they give you a free car. So I got a free Pontiac G6 convertible
wow.
2 years ago.
Oh
nice
yeah,
car, hardtop convertible. It's a gorgeous car.
But in addition to the Tupperware thing, Kevin, because that's not the only thing that Dee does. Dee, you do a lot of private parties. I mean. Private parties, emceeing,
a lot
duties,
of fundraising.
Fundraising.
I love, you know, I just love to give back.
So,
you know?
So Dee just goes out and also hosts events
yeah.
and things that aren't
bingos.
Aren't Tupperware related.
Yeah,
okay.
I work a lot with a lot of groups that are in recovery. So whenever they're trying to do fundraisers, I'm always ready to throw on a wig and show up and help people raise money for their events.
What do you do in your spare time?
In my spare
mm-hmm.
time,
he's
not
here.
As DWI.
He's here.
Yes. You know what? I really enjoy my friends. I really do. Yeah. I have a great partner. His name's Jeff. And, you know, like every Sunday, we just have a bunch of guys over and we do a barbecue. I'm so busy selling Tupperware all the time that I really don't have a social life. So when I actually do have some free time, I just love to spend it with family and friends.
Fantastic. Kevin, if someone wants to learn more about DWI to book either a Tupperware party or a private event or a hosting thing, how do they go about that?
They can email me at DEEWIEYE@AOL.
Okay, can you give that again before we sign off?
DEEWIEYE@AOL.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much for having us on. And Kevin, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. But on to you, Michael.
I wanted to say, Paul, one quick thing. For further information about any productions and or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts Live calendar brought to you by PerformingArtsLive.com, visit us during the week ahead at StateOfTheArtsLA.com.
And please be sure to join us next week when we have our guest Broadway and television star Dean Butler from television's iconic hit series Little House on the Prairie. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you,
Danny Bolero.
And we'll see you all next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.